Welcome to Tower Talks with Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast. And now for your weekly recap, a timely review of this week's top headlines and takeaways. Here's your host.
Welcome to Inside Towers Week in Review. I'm Leslie Stimson, Inside Towers Washington Bureau Chief. With me are Sharp Smith, our technology editor, and John Celentano, our business editor. This episode is sponsored by Inside Towers Intelligence, a quarterly market report that dives deep into the wireless infrastructure ecosystem. It looks at market trends, capital expenditures, relevant M&A transactions, and more. Intelligence is designed for managers, marketers, and investors. Our Q3 issue is available now. An annual subscription also includes an exclusive briefing and online support. For more information or to subscribe, visit insidetowers.com/intelligence. So the Supreme Court weighed in on whether a vaccine-related mandate from the administration governing large businesses can move forward. It puts on display the national divide over COVID, and it highlights the latest surge driven by the Omicron variant. The broad mandate from the Department of Labor's Occupational Safety and Health Administration Division requires employers with 100 or more employees to ensure that their workers are vaccinated or tested weekly and that they wear masks at work. Business owners and Republican state attorneys general sued to block the rule, and the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in that challenge. News reports predicted the conservative justices would go against that decision. And last Thursday evening, they did. They blocked the administration's efforts to enforce that vaccine or test requirements affecting businesses with 100 or more employees. Although Congress has indisputably given OSHA the power to regulate occupational dangers, it has not given that agency the power to regulate public health more broadly, the court wrote in an unsigned opinion. And that brings us to a story from Sharp about AT&T.
Yeah, Leslie, I'm gonna take this one. Sharp came up with a good article bringing us up to date on the developments with AT&T and Microsoft. We did an article back in June where AT&T had announced that it was effectively handing over management and operations of its mobile core network to Microsoft Azure for Operators. And with that move, AT&T's goal was to increase its productivity and cost efficiency and to be able to deliver large-scale network services. According to Sean Hackle, the Vice President of 5G Strategy for Azure for Operations, that this was the first time that a Tier 1 operator has embraced a commercial hybrid cloud technology to run its mobile network and to support its existing customer base. The second aspect that falls out of this is that this is a unique effort that's entirely focused on managing the mobile core network versus applications at the edge that have been sort of typical of collaborations between the carrier and the hyperscalers like Microsoft. Microsoft's goal is to digitally transform the network using software-defined networking, cloud-native network functions, virtualized network functions, according to Hackle. Microsoft will introduce both hybrid infrastructure and software that builds on a scalable, flexible network, incorporating artificial intelligence and machine learning to build what it refers to as self-optimizing networks that can heal, defend, and provision themselves. And as a result, AT&T will be able to, quote, end quote, hyper-automate, bringing down costs and improving overall service.
Well, thank you, John.
Yeah.
So the FCC took the wraps off the new affordable broadband rule. FCC Chairwoman Jessica Rosenworcel issued a draft notice of public rulemaking for the $14.2 billion program. It's based on directives in the infrastructure bill that was signed into law in mid-November. The program provides broadband service credits of up to $30 a month for eligible households and up to $75 a month for households on tribal lands. It also provides households a one-time payment of $100 to go towards certain connected devices. And that leads us to a story from Sharp this time about Dish and DirecTV.
Yes, Leslie. Last week we reported that Dish Network had promoted John Swieringa to president and CEO of Dish Wireless. And last week we reported that Dish Network had promoted John Swieringa to president and CEO of Dish Wireless. And this week, Jonathan Chaplin, New Street Research analyst, wrote an investor note where he postulated that the reorganization would eventually lead to a splitting off, a spinning off of the DBS business from Dish. And then as a matter of course, that DBS business would be merged with DirecTV. And the separation makes sense, according to Chaplin, because since now they have two presidents, Eric Carlson leads the DBS business and Sling, and Swieringa leads the wireless. And so it'll be very very easy for them to separate them into to two businesses. And there's been speculation for years that Dish would end up merging with the folks over at DirecTV. He does notice that part of the reason for the Dish Wireless to keep Dish Network to keep the DBS in there is that it's not a growing industry, but it's still bringing in $1.6 billion in revenue, and they've been using that to build out the Dish network. But Chaplin says with the two separated, they will be able to find strategic investors that are just interested in wireless to support them. And so they should, and also they'll be able to raise money using their spectrum as collateral. So this could be a big move for Dish, and definitely an important one for them to achieve their goal of becoming a nationwide facilities-based wireless carrier.
Well, thank you, Sharp. So the Senate voted last Tuesday 60-31 to confirm Alan Davidson to head the National Telecommunications and Information Administration. His confirmation is key because the agency will oversee about $48 billion for deploying broadband to underserved populations. He was nominated by President Joe Biden in late October. During his confirmation process, his appearance was pretty smooth. He didn't draw much ire. He told the lawmakers congressional infrastructure funding has created a once-in-a-generation opportunity to close the digital divide and connect all Americans. This will be my top priority in the coming years. He'll also be the point person for helping to settle spectrum turf wars, like what's going on now between the FCC and the FAA. We'll have more on that later in this broadcast. The NTIA has lacked a Senate-confirmed administrator since mid-2019, when Trump-era leader David Rettle resigned. Evelyn Romali has been leading the agency as acting administrator since January of 2021. Sharp, I think you're going to talk to us about T-Mobile now.
Yes, T-Mobile, never shy of hyperbole, appears to set very high goals and then proceeds to exceed them. Recently, they announced that they've covered 210 million people nationwide with their ultra capacity 5G by year end 2021, which exceeded their goal of 200 million people. And the quote from their representative, Peter Osvaldik, executive vice president and CFO, he refers to their deployment of network as the machine that Neville Ray, president and of technology, and his team have going. It's absolutely going to be something that we're tremendously focused on and accelerating the pace as much as possible in 2022, given the competitive advantage that creates for us. And part of that is that they've got more spectrum, mid-band spectrum, than AT&T and Verizon. And thanks to the delays on C-band, the folks over at AT&T and Verizon are not able to move forward in their own lane. And so I think T-Mobile is really throwing it into high gear because they want to, they've got the lead and they want to continue to expand on that lead. So the he talks a little bit about CapEx, that one of the ways that they're going to increase the build out in 2022 is borrowing some of the CapEx from 2023. So you definitely, according to Osvaldik, you're going to see a lot more money going into infrastructure build out in 2022, maybe a little drop off in 2023. The only flying the ointment is they are integrating with the Sprint towers, and that means decommissioning towers. And but he notes that even with the churn that has caused, they've still delivered 844,000 postpaid phone nets, plus 1.8 million total postpaid net customer additions. So they're still moving forward. It's an incredible story right now to watch them move forward.
All right. CTIA opened its 5G security test bed. It created what it's calling the STB in partnership with organizations across wireless, technology, and academia to test 5G security recommendations in real-world conditions using commercial-grade equipment and facilities. The 5G security test bed's founding members are AT&T, Ericsson, T-Mobile, U.S. Cellular, MITRE, and the University of Maryland. They contribute industry expertise that strengthens the testbed's ability to enhance the wireless security ecosystem and ensure strong protections in 5G networks. That's according to CTIA. So the testbed's first configuration is built with Ericsson equipment. It mirrors the initial setup for most 5G networks. A 5G radio access network is connected to a 4G core to create a 5G non-standalone network. In 2022, the test bed's configuration will shift to a 5G standalone network using a 5G core that will enable testing of 5G use cases. The test bed is located at a secure lab facility at the University of Maryland. It leverages personnel with experience in wireless security. The wireless core network is hosted in Northern Virginia by MITRE. And let's see, the next story. We said earlier in this broadcast we would have more about what's going on with the FAA, C-band, and the FCC. So the latest is the FAA announced toward the end of last week, it issued more than 1,400 orders that limit flight operations across the country. But it has made progress reducing possible flight disruptions from 5G services, which are due to begin January 19th from AT&T and Verizon. According to Bloomberg, the FAA said it hopes to provide information soon on the percentage of aircraft that will be subject to the restrictions. Notices to airmen were released by the agency at midnight. Those detailed new prohibitions. Industry observers said it is one of the largest issuings of what are called NOTAMs on record. And they're being handed out to roughly 24 large airports, as well as regions slated to host upcoming 5G services. The FAA said in a statement it has made progress to safely reduce the risk of delays and cancellations as wireless companies share more data and manufacturer altimeter testing results arrive. So these newest actions follow a compromise with AT&T and Verizon that we reported, where the carriers agreed to delay their 5G service for another 2 weeks until January 19th. The telecom service providers agreed to limit placement of cell towers near 50 airports for at least 6 months, even though they say 5G holds no risk to aviation. The FAA and aerospace industry groups countered by saying test results show the service could have an effect on altimeter readings if the aircraft is close to a cell tower. Altimeters help the plane determine its distance to the ground. So it'll be interesting to see how this continues, because the FCC developed its C-band wireless use rules after years of studying what could be the effects on the aerospace industry, which is in a different band with a huge guard band in between the two. And the FAA and the aerospace industry came out pretty much at the last minute and said, wait a minute, we don't think this is right. We need to do more testing. And this was years after the FCC had said, this is what we propose to do. What do you think about it? So this is all coming up at the last minute. And Sharp, I think that brings us to you.
Yes, Leslie. Dan Slanger, CFO of Crown Castle, recently spoke at the virtual City Apps Economy Conference. And he discussed the master lease agreement that the tower company signed with T-Mobile, and that was certainly had a lot of good news in it for Crown Castle. Slanger also discussed a historic commitment by T-Mobile to use Crown Castle for 35,000 small cells over the next 5 years, and Slanger noted that is the largest order that Crown Castle has received for small cells. And he also noted that between that agreement and the American Tower agreement, their annual small cell builds could eventually double from 5,000 a year up to 10,000 a year. And he felt like this is a real turning point in terms of small cell deployment for Crown Castle.
All right, Sharp, thank you. Well, that's a wrap for this week. Thank you for listening to Inside Towers Week in Review. We'll see you again in a week.
Thank you for listening to Tower Talks. To subscribe to our podcast, our daily newsletter, or use our other industry resources, please visit InsideTowers.com. Until next time, you've been listening to Tower Talks from Inside Towers, the wireless infrastructure industry's podcast.